This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later in the show, we'll be talking with Senator James Lankford about the stonewalling of the president's nominees. Also, Star Parker joins us to talk about her highly charged interaction with a congressman from Tennessee. And in just a moment, a discussion with Representative Lamar Smith about the terrorist attack in New York City earlier this week. But first, we've talked a lot on this program about the persecution of Coptic Christians in Egypt. And this week, Tony was in Egypt with several other evangelical leaders to talk with the president of that country. Let me read two short paragraphs Tony wrote about his visit. He said, "For Christians in the Middle East, harassment and terror have become a way of life. Eliminating it is the tall task of the world's leaders in this titanic struggle against evil. Fortunately for Christians in the region, Egypt's President El-Sisi is not shying away from that work. He and his administration are determined to rebuild what hate-filled men tried to destroy, including his people's freedom to worship without fear. I had the unique privilege of hearing that from President El-Sisi himself at a meeting in the presidential palace on Wednesday. Organized by our good friend Joel Rosenberg, a delegation of American evangelicals made the trip to Cairo to try to repair the damage done by Barack Obama's indifference to international religious freedom." That's great news from Tony, and if you want to read the entire statement, which was sent out in Thursday's Washington Update, you can find a link to it at tonyperkins.com. And since Tony was in Egypt, the voice you'll be hearing on today's program is that of Washington Watch Live producer Russ Jones. And that brings us to our first interview today, and Russ had the chance to talk with Lamar Smith about the terrible terrorist attack that occurred in New York City earlier this week.
Well, yesterday, terrorist Saifulo Saipov of Uzbekistan, in a rental truck from Home Depot, sped for nearly a mile down a popular bike-only path in lower Manhattan on Tuesday, killing eight people in the shadow of the World Trade Center and then shouting Allahu Akbar, meaning Allah is greater or Allah is the greatest. New York PD Deputy Commissioner John Miller, well, he appears to have followed almost everything exactly to the T, the instructions that ISIS has put out.
It appears that Mr. Saipov had been planning this for a number of weeks. He did this in the name of ISIS, and along with the other items recovered at the scene was some notes that further indicate that. He appears to have followed almost exactly to a T the instructions that ISIS has put out in its social media channels before, with instructions to their followers on how to carry out such an attack.
Now, what we're learning is this savage was in the U.S. on what's called a diversity visa, also known as a lottery. President Trump, well, he wants that option done away with.
I am today starting the process of terminating the diversity lottery program. I'm going to ask Congress to immediately initiate work to get rid of this program.
Well, let's now bring in Congressman Lamar Smith. He represents the 21st Congressional District of Texas. He's chairman of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He also serves on the House Homeland Security Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, good to be with you and your listeners as well.
Well, Congressman, you serve on the Homeland Security Committee, among other committees. What's your committee discussing as we talk?
Homeland Security Committee, I'm also a former chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which actually has jurisdiction over immigration policy, and I'm also a former chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee as well. I've introduced a number of bills over the years. In fact, I have one pending right now that would abolish the diversity visa program. There has been no justification for this program, I don't think, ever. So every couple of years, a lot of us in the House try to abolish it. And basically, as you mentioned, the diversity visa program is simply a lottery. They have millions of people apply for these 50,000 slots. A lot of people game the system. They put in multiple applications under different names or different versions of their own name, everybody trying to win the lottery and be one of those 50,000. What's wrong with that is that, first of all, it has no connection to either families in America or those with talents whom we need in America. So there is no certainty whatsoever that any of these 50,000 a year will have any be able to necessarily contribute to America or even have family in America. So it's not a worthwhile program. I agree with the president saying he'd like to see it abolished, and it does require Congress to enact legislation to do just that. And there's been a lot of talk on the House floor just even today earlier about trying to move a bill as quickly as we can.
Now, plans have cleared both chambers of Congress, right? Separately, but never at the same time. Is that the right understanding?
That's generally the case. We in the House have oftentimes passed legislation abolishing the diversity visa program. I believe we did it in the last Congress, but of course it frequently and often does sit on the Senate doorstep and not get considered by the Senate for various reasons, but no good reasons. We're years overdue in abolishing a program that doesn't serve any national interest that I'm aware of.
Now, in typical fashion, what can you say about, you know, Democrats who are beholden to this political correctness, blocking proposals for tougher immigration standards?
Yeah, it is just amazing to me, and I can offer no rational explanation for the actions of Democrats who want to, for example, block the president's effort to screen those who want to come into our country more closely, make sure that those from terrorist sponsoring nations are subjected to much more closer scrutiny. Why they want to oppose that, why they want to block that, I don't know. In the past, it's been the Democrats who voted to keep the diversity visa program. Maybe they'll change their views now. I'm skeptical, but always hopeful. And they just seem to oppose any immigration reform effort whatsoever. And I would argue that a lot of these immigration reforms, whether it's scrutinizing the backgrounds of people who want to come into our country, whether it's the diversity visa program, or whether it's even a bill that was my bill that was approved by the Judiciary Committee last week called the E-Verify program, where we make sure that jobs go to unemployed Americans, not illegal immigrants. And that was a straight-line party vote. It's all the Democrats are opposed, and most, if not all, the Republicans are in favor of these immigration reforms, and I cannot explain their actions.
And that's amazing, because that should be a bipartisan ideal, shouldn't it? That all Americans should be put to work first.
Yeah, it absolutely should be bipartisan, and all you have to do is look at the districts of some of the individuals who are opposed to, say, the E-Verify program, and almost always their unemployment rate is higher than the national average. They have tens of thousands of people in their district who are unemployed Americans, and yet they oppose a program that would make sure that these jobs held by 6 to 7 million illegal immigrants would go to American workers who are unemployed or underemployed, and also go to legal immigrants. And again, voting against it every single time. So if they want to put the interest of illegal workers ahead of the interest of unemployed American workers, that's up to them, but I think they ought to be held accountable.
Now, some are saying the last word the terrorist, Saipov, should ever hear, and I would like you to explain the differences, is you have the right to remain silent, but but be treated as a suspected enemy combatant versus a, I guess we might call it a civil criminal. Help us get into that a little bit.
Well, it really comes down to motivation, I think, as much as anything else. If you've got someone who kills somebody because they're robbing a house, that is not the same thing as somebody who is motivated by ideology. And what we're looking for with the individuals whom we call terrorists are those who are motivated by a foreign ideology, which is basically death to Americans or something close to that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, theirs is a very warped sense of a point of view, I guess. And but there is a distinction between the so-called common criminal and terrorists who are trying to oftentimes kill a lot of people in the name of, who knows, sometimes it's Allah, sometimes it's some other person or entity, and again are motivated by hate. Their motive is not to steal something. Their motive is to kill as many innocent people as they can. Sometimes they call the innocent people the infidels, which is totally inappropriate, of course. And theirs is a hatred that comes from a hatred of our freedoms, a hatred of our religion sometimes, a hatred of our way of life, none of which justifies their violent actions. But that does oftentimes identify a terrorist from somebody, as I say, who might be robbing our house.
Now, the police are saying he's been planning this attack for weeks.
For weeks.
What about the idea of sponsorship? If I've traveled all over the world, as have you, and if you're going to any country, you are expected to embrace those ideals and here to pledge allegiance to our flag, our mission as a country. Might it be a good idea to have a family here that's sponsoring someone?
That would, I think, be a good idea. It's hard to do that when you're admitting people who have skills and have job experience that we're looking for, because you have, well, actually, in that case, you have employers who are oftentimes sponsoring these individuals. They wouldn't necessarily be family members, of course, but at least you have someone vouching for them. As importantly as anything else, though, we need to make sure, as the president wants to do, that we conduct background checks on these individuals, that we make sure they're coming to the country for the right reason, if that can be discerned. But there are a lot of people who say, well, we can't conduct backgrounds on these individuals because they've come from countries that won't cooperate with us, or they come from terrorist sponsoring nations, and they don't have a record, or if they have a record, they're making sure that nobody sees it. And those are just the individuals whom the president wants to say, wait a minute, you're not automatically getting in until we know more about you. And I totally agree with the president. He is putting our national security first. He's putting the lives of innocent Americans first. And why people oppose that, including some judges who are, I think, politically motivated, I cannot explain. But we do need to have an immigration system that puts our national interests first, even if it means we don't admit everybody who wants to come to America, or even if it means, contrary to what some Democrats in Congress might want, even if it means we don't have the equivalent of open borders, and even if it means we don't give amnesty to everybody in the country illegally, not knowing who they are. But also, once you grant amnesty, of course, you're just encouraging more illegal immigration, more pressure on the borders. So immigration is probably the most complex emotional subject we consider in Congress. It impacts every element of our lives, every facet of our society, and that means we need to give it a lot of attention and make sure we do it right.
And we're just about out of time, but just briefly here, hasn't President Trump given a green light to our intelligence departments? That's the good news. And military to go after these Islamic extremists? You got about 10 seconds.
I understand that that's what he's doing. And the more we can go after these Islamic extremists, put pressure on them, lock them up, keep them out of the country, the better.
You can find out more about Lamar Smith when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at a proposed change to how the Senate confirms presidential nominees.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. As we've talked about before on this program, Democrats have been stonewalling many of President Trump's nominations to the lower courts, as well as federal appointments. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma has a proposal to change how the Senate confirms these nominees, helping to break the gridlock in the Senate. Here's Russ Jones with Senator James Lankford.
Welcome, Senator Lankford. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be back with you again.
Well, you're one of our great guys serving in Washington, D.C., and we can always count on you for the truth and to pushing legislation that has our best interests in mind, and you're pushing for ways to get the Senate working again. Tell us what you're up to.
So there are multiple different proposals that I've laid out there to be able to change the rules of the Senate. The one I'm working on right now to try to be able to move in the next couple of months is one that deals with the way we do nominees. Right now, Democrats cannot stop us from pulling nominees in because of Harry Reid changing the rules to say only 51 people are needed to actually pass it. So obviously we have 52 Republicans. We can move anything through committee and on the floor. What is still left over on our rules, though, is 30 hours of debate that has to precede a vote on that. We have 1,200 people that have to go through Senate confirmation. On current pace right now, with the length of time that it takes to be able to do this, it will take 11 years for President Trump to be able to get his staff. To be able to put this in context, President Trump has had, these are called cloture votes, that's demanding the 30 hours of debate. There have been 47 of those so far just in President Trump's first year here. That is more than every president in the history of the country combined in their first year. So this is unique. And I've had a lot of people say, Republicans did this to Democrats. That's not true. That is absolutely not true. This has never been done before, to not allow a president to be able to get his staff. So my proposal is pretty straightforward, that we limit the amount of debate for each person so that we can actually move people through. Whether you're Republican or a Democrat, the president should be allowed to get their own staff in place once they're elected. And right now, the president doesn't have that privilege. So because they've done this, I'm trying to be able to work in a bipartisan way on an agreement to be able to fix that rule and to be able to get that done this year.
And I've got some of those numbers. By mid-July, in each of the four previous administrations, Bush 41, Clinton, and then Bush 43 and Obama, the average number of Senate confirmed appointments was 190, and for President Trump, that number was 50. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, it's been a remarkable process. He has half the number of people in place total than what previous presidents had. It's exceptionally frustrating. This 30 hours of debate on individuals that passed overwhelmingly. There was a judge that we did that was a district judge last week that they required 30 hours of debate on, and then they passed with 78 votes. So some of these individuals are not even controversial. They're just doing it as slow as they can because they know the Senate cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. It can only do one thing at a time on the floor. And so if they can lock up the nominations process, the president doesn't get his people, and we can't move legislation through.
And many know President Trump has a different leadership style. He comes from the business world. He comes from New York City, and what he says is what he means, and brings that, you know, he has zero experience in politics. And so do you think some on the left are exploiting that process in this what you call slow walking?
I don't think they're exploiting him and his leadership style. I think this is their resist movement, that whatever is resisting the president, they're going to do, even if it hurts the country. And that's really what is most frustrating to me, because all the agencies in Washington, D.C. may have a cabinet head, but that cabinet head doesn't have any staff underneath them. The diplomatic corps is not done. We don't have an ambassadors in place. So literally, countries around the world don't have an ambassador right now. We don't have assistant secretaries in any of the cabinets around the city. We don't have judges in place. They are grinding government to a halt because they're mad at this president. And so they're shutting down our diplomacy worldwide, and they're shutting down the function of every single agency.
Well, and some are wanting to get rid of the filibuster while others want to keep it, and you don't want to get rid of the filibuster. Can you help our listeners explain what that's all about and why it matters?
There is actually a middle ground in this, and it's the difficulty of understanding the very arcane Senate rules that are out there. The U.S. Senate is the only place in the federal government where the minority always has a voice. It's not in the Supreme Court. It's not in the House of Representatives. It's not in the White House or in the agencies. It's only in the Senate, and it was designed that way from the beginning, that there would be one spot in government that all voices would be heard, both majority and minority would be heard, every state would be heard in their opinion, and so it would literally slow things down, make sure that everyone's got a voice in it, and then come to a resolution. That all sounds very good. The way it was designed, though, is that if a senator wasn't heard, they could force continued debate on it. So basically, they would force that we would keep debating it until everyone's heard. That's what the filibuster was supposed to be about. Now the filibuster is being used to keep anyone from even debating. That's exactly opposite of what it was designed for. So every single bill that comes up, there's actually two votes of 60 before you can actually move to final passage. To start debate, you have to have 60. to end debate, you have to have 60, and then you vote on it with just a simple majority of 51. What I would like to do is take away that first vote of 60, get rid of the first filibuster, and to say whatever any party wants to debate, we should at least be able to debate it and talk about it. The American people cannot believe that Republicans can't even debate an issue on the floor. We can't even bring it up, and they want to get that fixed, and I completely agree.
Well, Senator Lankford of Oklahoma, thank you so much. You're another one of our favorites here on Washington Watch. We appreciate you, and Tony Perkins says hello and sends his greetings.
Well, thanks to all of you and what you're doing.
You can find out more about Senator Lankford when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Star Parker.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Well, on Tuesday, during a hearing of a House Judiciary Subcommittee, there was a heated exchange between Democrat Congressman Steve Cohen of Tennessee and pro-life advocate and inner-city expert Star Parker. Here's guest host Russ Jones introducing a clip from the hearing.
Let's listen to Star Parker giving testimony on Capitol Hill about the heartbeat bill. Let's listen.
I feel it disingenuous that the issues of Medicaid would come up and other opportunities for us to readdress what has happened and broken down in our most distressed zip codes, the way that Planned Parenthood specifically targets these particular zip codes with abortion. Abortion is the leading cause of death in the black community today. Since Roe v. Wade was legalized, 20 million humans have been killed inside of the womb of black women. And then on Halloween, Planned Parenthood tweets out that the black women are safest if they abort their child rather than bring it to term. To the gentleman from Texas who brought up Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, I think that it is important that we put in record that the needs of those that are most vulnerable in society cannot be addressed with abortion. Abortion feeds a narrative that women are victims, that they have no control over their sexual impulses. And as a result of this narrative being forced down into our hardest hit communities, we are seeing now recklessness in sexual activity and marriage has collapsed. In the 50s, 70% of black adults were married. Today, that number is 30%. This is causing a lot more social pathologies that have to be addressed through different types of legislation, not the heartbeat bill. The heartbeat bill is to protect the innocent.
Chair, I recognize the gentleman from Tennessee, the ranking member.
Thank you. Then I am not disingenuous about anything I say about Medicaid or Medicare or LIHEAP or SNAP programs. And to suggest I'm disingenuous shows your ignorance or your absolute inability to deal with Congress people the way they should. I believe in those issues, and I think they're proper, and to say I'm disingenuous is just wrong, and I expect an apology.
I would ask for an apology from the gentleman from Tennessee calling our witness ignorant when it seems to me she has a whole lot more knowledge and wisdom.
She's ignorant about me.
You're both out of order.
A fine admission on your part.
Given the lack of civility before this committee, this concludes today's hearing. Thanks to all of our witnesses for attending. Without objection, all members will have 5 legislative days to submit additional written records for the witnesses or additional materials for the record. This hearing is now adjourned.
Whew, that was our buddy Louie Gohmert breaking in there. Well, with us now is Star Parker herself. She is founder and president of CURE, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, a conservative activist, a commentator, just one of those people that's in the trenches. Star, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you. And you notice your friend Trent Franks was also defending me, and it started getting a little rowdy.
So, oh, my gosh. Was that hard to listen to that again? It was hard for me to watch that.
Oh, no, darling. You know what? I've been doing this so long, I know that I'm not going to let liberals get away with their lies. So if you throw a rock, then you're going to hear the dog bark. So I kind of had to, I was a little out of order because the question that was asked me was not the answer that I gave. I did answer the question. because Congressman King asked about I had compared slavery and abortion, and I'd said that, you know, in the answer to his question, that if you take away the title of Roe v. Wade and the Dred Scott decision, the language is verbatim. I mean, they're talking about property. They're talking about ownership. They're talking about, you know, inhumane. So, but then I changed the subject to address what not just that gentleman who actually took offense, but one of the protesters had also brought up some of the welfare programs. And I just think that we shouldn't let those opportunities go without confrontation when they try to talk about abortion and then bring up welfare. These are two different subjects. We need to address both, but we certainly need to address abortion first and by itself.
I just love it when we have the truth on our side, and you were just smacking it so good. I just love that. I was watching that. I was like, I need some popcorn. But you know, due to the lack of decorum, you know, that as we heard, the chairman abruptly ended the hearing. Everybody went their separate ways. And all this was happening just also on the heels of White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was called dumb as a rock in a tweet. I mean, what's going on?
Well, what's going on is the left lost, and boy, are they mad, because they know that the loss that they took last November has long-term implications for their agenda that they've been getting away with pretty much in law for the last 50 years. Law has changed our culture. So what's happening now is law is going to change back so that we can begin to get back toward Judeo-Christian principles that founded our great country. And with this new leadership in Washington, that's exactly what's happening. That heartbeat bill, for instance, will probably end up on the House floor. The House will vote on it. And if the Senate decides, well, maybe we won't, we'll take a pass, they'll be replaced, those that took the pass. And then over the next couple of years, we probably will end abortion. We'll get another case before the court, the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will probably have another member. So this is a real opportunity for the right. But the left is coming unglued as a result.
If you want to find out more about Star Parker, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.